You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Chicago Audible, and welcome to our Week 9 postgame show. The Chicago Bears fell to the Tennessee Titans 24-17. Don't look at that score as any indication of how this game kind of fared out. The Bears, with a huge lack of offense, had really no chance from the get-go, and we kind of anticipated that with all the different things that were happening up front for the offensive line, but it still doesn't make it any more bearable kind of watching that one. I'm Russell DeWitt. Joined with me is my co-host Nicholas Moriano. And Nick, as we kind of just jump into this post-game show and discuss our initial thoughts here, how you feeling? For me, irritated is going to be the word that I'll choose here. Just again, that was a long few hours. It's a nice Sunday afternoon, and I feel like I got gypped a little bit staying indoors and watching a game like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I texted my uncle at halftime saying, please tell me you turned off this Bears game. You're outside enjoying this beautiful weather in November, which we don't normally get in the Chicagoland area. And he said, oh, yeah, I definitely did that. I didn't need your advice, Nick, but I'm glad you just texted me to make sure I was doing that. But, yeah, disappointing. But we told fans on our preview show, Will, that you should expect to see something ugly on Sunday. And that's what it was. It was everything that we thought it was going to be, and probably a little bit more, to be completely honest. So it was something that we were expecting, but it's still frustrating as hell to see it kind of unwind as the, you know, four quarters of this game just kind of happened and thank God are done with.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we're watching a super bad, a terrible and inept, an incapable offense squander a very good Chicago Bears defense in. It's just frustrating to kind of have the same tune now. This is like 3 weeks in a row where we're coming on. We're not feeling good about it. There's nothing we can do to fix it. I don't think there's anything that they can do to fix it. And we're going to have to watch this thing kind of throughout and see how it plays out. But I don't think the hope is there that it felt like we even had when we were sitting at 5-1 just a few weeks ago. It feels like a whole lifetime ago right now, Nick. And I know I told you when I was looking at this game, you know, I shook the kids' magic 8-ball and it said, outcome, not so good. This is not going to be a good game. I sent you one because you told me in the last show that you never had a magic 8-ball, always wanted a magic 8-ball. And I don't know, did you ask it? Is this what it foretold you? Or I'm just curious. I know you're telling me your dad was already inquiring and trying to use the powers that be. And I'm glad to see that the whole family's kind of getting into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't ask it anything specifically about the Bears game yesterday when I got this, but I might as well just shake it and see, will this get any better? Maybe I should have waited for the end of the show. Here, I'll leave the result for the end of the show. We'll see if it gets any better. We're just going to put it down, and we're just going to putting down the magic 8-ball. I shook it already. Will the offensive struggles, this offensive problem, will they get any better? Well, as the season goes on, the magic 8-ball has the answer. I guess we'll have to wait till the end of the show to see what that answer is.
It's spoken. Don't look at it if you haven't yet, Nick, and we'll figure that out here. I like that. That gives us something to look forward to, which I feel like we kind of need in a show like this. But is there any other just initial thoughts, or should we jump into our Miller Lite Monster moment of the game and really just start diving in?
Yeah, let's get to the monster moment. Will, again, we'll kind of dissect every level of this offense. I guess we have to. But, yeah, let's go on to the monster moment here, Will.
All right, so for me, my monster moment here for Week 9, it's going to have to be the fumble, scoop, and score. It's the biggest play, at least for me, in the game. 4 minutes, 53 seconds left in the third quarter. Bears were driving. They were inside of Tennessee territory, I believe it around the 30-yard line, and they had a chance at that moment to make it a one-score game. You're only looking at a 10-0 ball game at that moment. And instead, you do a screen pass. You give it to Monty. He fumbles it. The guy picks it up, runs it all the way back, which, by the way, on that play, Nick Foles is trying to chase him down from behind. I've never seen Nick Foles run that fast. It's unfortunate that it takes him to have the ball. Maybe the ball's just too heavy, and that's why he was always so like slow and statue-like in the pocket and unable to really, you know, scramble all too much. But for me, Nick, I thought that one was huge. It turned it from an opportunity for the Bears to make it a one-score game. Instead, turned it into a three-possession ball game, which for this Bears offense, unless the defense shouldered all the load, it's just way too much to overcome. So for me, I thought that was the biggest moment of the game. And heck, you take that off the board, and again, I know the Bears scored in garbage time, but you're still looking at a potential tied football game there, at least if you're just looking at the points scored in this one. So for me, that Montgomery fumble and those points off of it, to me, is my monster moment of the game. How about you, Nick? What was the biggest moment in your eyes?
You know what, and this is definitely not a moment that dictated the game, especially because it was so early on, but I look at that Bears first drive, Will, and the Bears are kind of moving the ball, surprisingly. First possession on offense, then they come down to the fourth and one play, and it's a fake toss to Patterson, and then the run to Montgomery that gains absolutely nothing on fourth and one. The Bears turn it over on downs. They're at the Tennessee 34-yard line. That could have been a big moment in just getting a potential score, even if it was just 3 points. Because we saw how close this game was in this first half for a long time. But that I knew right then and there, once that happened, there was the offense wasn't going to do anything. The next three possessions, Will, three and outs. Three and outs in a row after this first possession. So it wasn't the biggest play. Like I said, it's not going to dictate the entire game. There's still a whole entire game to be played after this Bears first drive. But it was at fourth and one, the inability to pick up a yard, the play call itself, like Nick Foles having to fake the toss and then having to hand off the ball to David Montgomery. What you're asking, yes, you're trying to get maybe some misdirection, some guys, the Titans defenders, to go one way, but you're also asking the offensive line to just hold that block a little bit longer. Four or five starters, original starters, are not in the game. So that just, I knew right then and there, Will, Bears offense wasn't going to do anything, and it ended up being right. But that's my monster moment, the inability to pick up that fourth down. There were, you know, several others throughout the game. Again, didn't dictate what could have been the game, but it just foreshadowed what this offense was incapable of doing.
You know what? Again, this game felt like an eternity from quarter to quarter, drive to drive, play to play. I forgot about that. And even later in the game, they had other opportunities when they were knocking on the door, at least in field goal range, and they ended up trying to go for it. And there's ones where they have the false starts, and they're moving themselves backwards and out of field goal range. And that's interesting because, again, there's more than one possession here. You're looking at, I think, three different possessions where the Bears could have came away with at least 3 points, and how this game was going early, that could have been enough to help at least get this Bears team in a real position to perhaps come away and squander or, you know, come away with a victory here. So for me, that's a big monster moment, like you mentioned, as well. And of course, our monster moments are brought to you by our friends over at Miller Lite here at the Chicago Water Bowl. Our goal throughout the years has always been to bring Bears fans together all across the globe. And of course, that's more important now than ever. Whether you're toasting to friends near or far, great taste is always close by with the original light beer, Miller Lite, who has always been there to bring people together through Miller time. Miller Lite, it's the only beer of the Chicago Bears. They've had a long-term partnership with the Bears. They've been a staple at Soldier Field for decades. And I know, Nick, you and I, we have many great memories toasting touchdowns. I wish we had more of those today to talk about with Miller Lights, with our friends, our families at home games, you know, chanting, "Duh, Bears." So here's to the Bears. Here's to the original light beer. It's Miller time. No matter where you're watching the game, it's always Miller time in Chicago. Pick up Miller Lite for your game day needs. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Alrighty, you're listening to the Chicago Audible, and this is our post-game show here, Week 9, Bears, Titans. Bears fall now to 5-4 on the season. And Nick, before we kind of jump into the second quarter and really just, I don't know how much we want to dissect this offense, if there even is an offense to discuss. Before we do that, is there a stat or two that really stands out to you after this game? I think third down is probably the most obvious one that I can just think of right now, just looking at the box score, where this Bears offense was 2 of 15 on third down, going up against the worst third down defense in the league, which is nothing new. Last week, we were going up against like the 30th ranked one, and still struggled with a makeshift offensive line. Didn't expect things to really pick up here in this regard, but also I felt like they weren't giving themselves even chances with the short throws ahead of the chains. It's just very frustrating to watch in general. But 2 of 15 to me on third down was a big one, and I have another one too, but before I do, I'm just curious to your take here on a standout stat.
Yeah, I think 375 yards of offense for the Bears to Tennessee's 228. We just talked about right at the beginning of this podcast that even the score is misleading, 24-17. What it actually was just a complete whooping, a beatdown by the Tennessee Titans on the Bears, and the 375 yards that the Bears were able to get throughout the four quarters of this game, that's not indicative of how bad this offense was, because the yards looks good. Like 375, you'll probably take it given what the Bears have been doing on offense this season, but that's no indication of how bad this game actually was. And to even have more yards than the Tennessee Titans that put up 24 points, and obviously we have the fumble return for a touchdown by a Titans defense, but still, they gained more yards than the Titans, but this offense was atrocious. I think I tweeted during the game, Will, like, I think this is the worst Bears performance, offense performance I've ever seen. Again, the score doesn't reflect that, but just watching it unfold, penalties, missed blocks, like everything looks so bad. And there's been a lot of bad ones, Will. Like, I think of 2019, Bears-Eagles. That was a terrible one for Mitch Trubisky. There's been plenty. And this one, for some reason, even though I knew it was not going to be a good outcome for this Bears offense, this one frustrated me. So again, recency bias, maybe it's the worst one, but it's sad that I can say, well, no, there was that one last year, maybe you could almost point to almost every season and be like, well, there was that one, but this one was just awful. And that 375 yards does not reflect what this Bears offense was capable of doing today against the Titans.
You must forget the Jimmy Clausen game versus Seattle, where the Bears couldn't even pick up a first down in that game. So it's a little bit better here. But again, I think it's the frustration coming through. And I understand. I mean, it was hard to watch today and all. And one thing that I mentioned in our postgame show towards the end when we were predicting MVBs, I was like, you know, Nick Foles, I think, will end up being the MVP primarily because I thought they're going to have to run through him a lot with this offensive line. And I think the box score shows that happened, the fact that he had to throw that sucker 52 times today, which he got halfway to 100. I want to find out the last time a Bears quarterback threw 52 times or over 50 times in a game, because I can't remember seeing a number this high doing this show. Again, maybe once, but I'd have to look into it here after the game, because that's a lot of attempts, and I think it's showing that they couldn't run. And on top of that too, the offensive line just having to use the quick passing game as an extension of your run. But 52 times in Nick Foles' hands against the Titans defense, you think you would get a little bit more results than this, but unfortunately that is not the case. And Nick, we can jump right into the second quarter of our show and talk about this Bears offense now officially. I think let's just begin with the offensive line, because that was the biggest focal point that we had in the preview show. And I know that Tennessee didn't have Clowney. I know they've been really, really bad at getting after quarterbacks, and I know people were getting all shifted around. You have guys all over the place that were making some, you know, first career starts. I think I actually have it over here. You had Arlington Hambright at left guard, who had zero career snaps. Alex Bards had zero career snaps at center. And then you had Jermaine Ifedi. And then Rashad Coward, who had one career snap at right tackle, which I think every snap today he was just completely overpowered. And unfortunately, I don't think a tackle would ever have been a good fit for him after what I saw here today. But Nick, I know we all say, you know, games were won and lost in the trenches. Bears drastically lost this battle up front. And I said it also in the preview, you know, it all rolls downhill. Did you see that today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. With everything started up front, and then with the inability to provide not even subpar protection, obviously that affected Foles. But it's like, what else can you do? You know, this is the offensive line you have to go with limited coaching going into the week, with COVID impacting people. You're playing guys, like you just mentioned, Will, zero career snaps, a seventh-round draft pick at left guard, Alex Bars, being a guy that couldn't even beat out Rashad Coward, who then has to start at right tackle, being the center. It's like, this was bound to happen. It really was. And I almost don't want to even blame the players because they're being asked to be starters. I almost go more to like the management and saying, like, how is this the group that you have to put out there? Why isn't there anybody else that's capable? And I know the Bears are going to bring in Eric Kush at some point. But still, like, this is the group that they have. This is all they got. And now they have to try to work this throughout the rest of the season, possibly. We don't know when or if Bobby Massey's going to come back. Cody Whitehair is still dealing with that calf and the COVID protocol and seeing when he can ever come back. This is the group for maybe the next two games. Obviously, they have a bye week. Maybe they can get healthy at that point. But it obviously wasn't good enough. And anybody expecting to see more with less in terms of offense production, no way. Not with this group. Not ever. And the Titans are not a good pass-rushing team. They're just not. And they had 3 sacks today. They were tied for the second least coming into this game with 7 at 3 with their total now. And there could have been a plenty, plenty more, Will. So it's a terrible situation to be in. To be completely blunt with it, like, I don't know how this offense can get better, and we'll see what the Magic 8-Ball says. If it will, it probably won't, but we'll see.
I don't know how it can, honestly. They don't have any push. They can't even block correctly. They can't pick up basic blitzes or even just one-on-one winning battles, and it's not... There's nothing that I saw today that gives me any confidence for this group moving forward. By the way, Nick Foles' 52 is 8 shy of the Bears' all-time record, I see, of passing attempts in the game, of Eric Kramer's 60 that he had in 1997 against the Jets. I'm still trying to find out if I've seen anyone else in the 50s ever on this show, but so far I found Eric Kramer at his 60. I'll get off of this page. We can get back to our discussion here, and I'll figure it out here, either on the show or after. I'm just really curious. It's like, you know, after all this, why not just, if I can find one little thing, that'd be interesting here. But offensive line, again, it's not going to get any better. Even if you get, you're not going to get Bobby Massey back for a while. So then your only hope here up front for now, I mean, you could get Jason Spriggs back here soon, which is a little bit helpful. But even then, I mean, it's marginal. It's no matter what, it's not going to be enough to really help this team as we kind of get throughout the rest of this season. So, yeah, I don't have much hope. We'll find out what the Magic 8-Ball says. What are your thoughts? We've been very vocal against the play calling lately, and it felt like the very first drive I liked what we were seeing. A lot of moving the pocket, using some play action, quick passes to the outside, and we were eating it up. And then I feel like we forgot that we even did that on the first drive. I know teams make adjustments, but obviously we abandoned it ourselves. So what were just your general thoughts on, just, I guess, play calling in general?
Yeah, and it's hard to assess, like, right after the game, given, like, the offensive line's probably blowing some plays for even to see what the full play could actually be. But I had a problem with, like, personnel standpoint. Like, I know Cole Kmet was not the healthiest going into this game, but he was out there. Where was he, though? Right. Like, where was Cole Kmet at any point? Like, the Bears basically decided, like, once David Montgomery went down, Ryan Nall, if you've seen the game, he gets his first touchdown, that's great and all, but, like, these shorter passes towards the flats, like, they're going to Ryan Nall, like, that's easily a thing that Cole Kmet could be doing, or even Jimmy Graham getting those little short passes. Like, why can't Cole Kmet be the guy being the recipient of those passes? And not to say that that's going to make a dramatic difference, it's not, but just a personnel on that very specific instance, like tight end usage, where's Cole Kmet? So I had a problem with that. I mean, again, I liked what they were doing the first drive, but I think just overall, Matt Nagy couldn't really run the offense that he, whatever this offense is, he couldn't do it with that offensive line. But I think once we get time to kind of go back, watch exactly what it was, for what we could see, I think we're still going to find a lot of glaring disappointments, as we usually do, Will. But what was your assessment of Nagy's play calling and this very disappointing 24-17 loss for the Titans?
It's a good question. Not good, but also I called plays for a middle school this year, and I didn't have much help from an offensive line. And I can understand how restricted will be the word I want to use here when you don't have a line that can block anything. I had it where I'm running plays up the middle, destroyed. Trying to run it outside, destroyed. Quick passes, destroyed. And I felt like, you know, no matter what I call, it's going backwards. And even though the Bears gained yards today, I do think Nagy probably had a similar sense where, you know, it doesn't matter what I'm going to call here because I don't have the protection up front that's going to allow it to succeed until you get to garbage time. And then you find ways to move the ball down the field. But again, when you have a Tennessee Titans defense that had 7 sacks on a year, they came away with 3 today without their best pass rusher on the field. I think it's a very much a big point there to show how effective they were able to be, even though they haven't been able to all season. That shows how bad everyone up front really was. I mean, there are times, and on top of that too, I guess I want to kind of shift off play calling and just the guys out there in general. The execution standpoint was another frustrating element. It seemed like miscommunications in the backfield. They couldn't get the timing right on handoffs, and you're fumbling as a quarterback. I understand you have a different center. Now you're third center in 3 games, which I know that's another issue that no quarterback wants to endure throughout a season. But, yeah, just it seemed like they couldn't even get into a rhythm. Even when they could move the ball, they couldn't. Really never felt like a cohesive unit. It felt like they got – a good play here, a good play there, and then they start shooting themselves in the foot, going backwards. You know, 1 step forward, about 10 steps backward. That's just the offense that we've seen all year, unfortunately. But whenever they felt like some momentum was building, they find some way, whether it be a false start or a penalty or just a drop or a sack allowed, to really just kill the momentum in a hurry. Again, this is pre-fourth quarter, but that's kind of – you know, some more, I guess, venting for me. It's just the execution and the inability to even maintain any established momentum that they did create.
Yeah, well, and just to kind of add on to this, let's even go in drive-by-drive kind of standpoints. The first drive, Allen Robinson catches that ball on what is the 3rd and 5 play. He's short of the sticks. We always talk about the details and details of route running. Allen Robinson needs to know how far he needs to run to get a first down on that reception, which he was open on. He goes out of bounds. The 4th down play, Bears can't convert. They turn over the ball on downs. Then you have on the 3rd drive, 3rd and 6, Foles actually steps up in the pocket. Miller's open in the middle of the field. Foles can't hit him. So these are 2 plays by your offensive, like the veterans, the leaders of your offense. Your quarterback can't make a play over the middle to Anthony Miller, who's open on 3rd and 6. Allen Robinson can't run the right depth on his 3rd and 5 down play to get the first down. Then I just think of the false start penalty on Jimmy Graham. Like, that's another veteran making a mistake. So, yeah, we could blame the offensive line that doesn't have a lot of experience, a lot of young guys on there. But those 3 players I just mentioned, all veterans, all people that should know what to do and how to execute, but guess what? Are lacking the details that Matt Nagy keeps preaching about. So we can blame the offensive line, we can blame the play calling, but it goes back to what you were just talking about, Will. Execution, details. They don't have that. They're such an undisciplined team, and it's frustrating to watch veteran guys make these mistakes, because if there's anybody that should be doing something right, it's at least those guys. They can't even get it right. So this whole offense is just, it's trash. It is basically trash, and that's what we have to roll with, because nobody can get it right. And again, I am just frustrated even talking about it, but that's what the Bears have at this point.
I was just so like 3rd downs again, getting back to those, and just every throw was tremendously short of the line to gain. And again, they're not set up to even have any downfield blocking to make these. We haven't seen it work all year. I don't know why we're not trying it. And then what happens? They throw the ball past the sticks late in the game to Riley Ridley, who, hello, finally he's active. They get him out there to give him a target, and you're able to convert. Your very first 3rd down is a 3rd and 16 conversion. And what I think the Bears did good, at least early on in this game, was putting themselves in capable 3rd down spots. So it was 3rd, I'm looking down my list, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 2. You should be converting on a few of those against the worst 3rd down defense in the NFL, but short pass, incomplete pass, pressure, threw it away, stuff because you're getting too cute on some short runs. It's really just discouraging, and it's just so hard to watch. And there was one play design I kind of liked. It didn't work, but it was on a 3rd and 18 where it was actually just like it was like a crossing route to Cordero Patterson about 8 yards down the field. And even though it frustrated me, what I saw differently though is they had like trips on the other side and actually used them as like lead blockers down. And so it was almost like an extended like screen pass, but down the field when he had the blockers in front and had them, but he couldn't just meet them and get up there. So that was an interesting concept, which we've seen that not in a third and 18. But yeah, it's really frustrating. And again, only getting into red zone, only one to get down the fourth quarter. I forgot what the red zone even meant. I don't even know, Nick. It's just we can hash it out. We can just talk about how bad they suck, whether it's ever. But I don't know if it's even worth it at this point. I don't know what I can say that I haven't said already this season. I don't know what they can do to fix it, from play calling to quarterback play to offensive line. It's all broken. And I don't know what they can do. And it's just frustrating. It's infuriating. And I don't know. I'm at a loss because I try to find positive spins. I try to find ways to fix it. But also, like, everything I want to complain about, it's nothing new. And I hate repeating myself too much this season.
Yeah, no, I get you, Will. And, you know, we shouldn't do that. But the one bright spot, and it's literally one – well, obviously, Allen Robinson's a great player himself. You see the acrobatic catches some of these wide receivers are making, but – Darnell Mooney he's a fantastic wide receiver. Man, the Bears are so lucky to have a guy like that in this offense. Seeing that one catch where the linebacker's trailing and he makes a catch and he gets hit by the linebacker at the same time, or even there was a one where the ball's low by Nick Foles, he's able to catch in stride and try to get a few additional yards. It's fun watching him play. And I love seeing the frustration out of him when he sees that Jimmy Graham makes his false start. He immediately puts his hands on his helmet. And then I think during the broadcast, they said, oh, he took off his helmet in frustration. Well, that's a fifth-round rookie who's just fed up with all the crap he is seeing on the side because he's holding his end of the bargain, just doing as much as he can. But all these other guys cannot pull their weight. And I'm happy the Bears have him. It's unfortunate that they don't have an offensive line or even a quarterback that can really maximize his potential, even in his rookie season. But it is fun to watch him play. I love the emotion he plays with, and he's a bright spot. Not that that's gonna make people feel happy about everything that we saw today, but he is a bright spot. We're lucky to have Darnell Mooney. It's only gonna go. You would think it's only gonna go up from here if the Bears can actually give him something to work with.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about that one. He had himself a pretty good game overall. Mooney did, 43 yards on his 5 catches. He was the most targeted Bear, and it's nice to see that they're going his way and they're trusting in him. But it's still, again, I don't know to me if it's enough. And then while you're talking, I'm like, what else kind of pissed me off as I was watching this game? And I was remembering, you got the fake punt, you that worked out for him. Right, you get the fake punt, and then you have to burn a timeout because you don't have a play lined up afterwards. It's like either that you're overthinking the play call and you don't get it in quick enough, or you literally didn't think it was going to work, or he didn't even know they were going to do it because Chris Tabor just pulled it out and didn't even tell Nagy. He's like, wait, what? And I have to put the offense back out here? I wasn't even ready. But, Nick, to me it seems like every time they show Nagy, here's my problem with him. Ready? Every time they show Matt Nagy, this is what he's doing. He's not watching the game. He's in his play call sheet, deep into the thing. And maybe there's too many plays. Maybe they're the wrong plays on that sheet. But he's just always up in it. And I don't know if he's ever watching the game that's actually playing in front of him. And I wonder if that's part of his issue as well.
No, I'm glad you really brought that up, Will. And yeah, I think one of us is going to at some point. But after that fake punt, I just really think that Matt Nagy, if he was a part of it, making this fake punt happen, which led to the longest run that the Bears had, which was from Barkevious Mingo, 11 yards. Congrats to Chris Tabor and Mingo for accomplishing that today. But I just honestly think that he didn't think it was going to work. And so when it did, like, oh, shoot, I got to find a play and timeout. So details, Will. Details. We're going to talk about the details where they're not there. And it's so, so frustrating. But, yeah, like, I bet if we were to, like, really go through all of our notes, we could just keep on finding things that can frustrate us. And in this performance, yeah, it makes sense. But, yeah, that was another one where you just see the Bears offense is not prepared. And Matt Nagy, whenever you see him on the sidelines, just deep into the play call sheet that I wonder if it just says this is going to result in a punt, 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 just on the play call sheet. So he's like, okay, maybe.
He has like the red expo marker. I'm like, I wonder if he's like crossing off plays that he just knows won't work anymore. And again,
the whole playbook is,
you know, and red X. They had all the play call sheets around them when they like did like the draft war room. And it's like, you have all these plays, yet you can't find any of them that are working. And to me, it's really ridiculous. And speaking of that, I know you talked about, you know, Cole Kmet and where the heck is he? He's out there, but they're not using him. I think that's another huge frustration that we're all sharing right now. Ryan Nall having four targets in that fourth quarter. And okay, fine, I know they play different positions, but the fact that you're having, again, a target share where zero of them are going to Cole Kmet, and if you use Kmet like you did Graham a little bit today underneath, I think you pick up more yards because Komet's a little bit more athletic, he's quicker, he can force more missed tackles, and I feel like it's just yet another missed opportunity. I know he was hurt, but like if he's hurt, but he can go out there and run block for you, can he also catch the ball and run a little bit? I would think so, if he's out there and he's available. But and then one other thing I'm going to gripe about real quick is the infatuation that they continue to have with a Cordero Patterson on offense. It seems like it's going to him a little bit too much, and I still would wish if they needed to put in a running back. I mean, heck, Nall, fine, Pierce, he didn't even get out there until like the very end of the game. If you feel like you have to get some more production out of a back, I feel like you need to put someone that's more of a natural fit at the position. And I know they like Patterson, but 7 touches today, 30 yards for it, 40 yards for it, it's not enough. And I talked about that during our report card show. He's touching the ball a lot more. And he's still way down his total yards from last year, yet over double the amount of touches. They're not getting nearly as much, you know, return on touch. We'll call it rot, because that's what this Bears offense is, just a straight rotten. So, I don't know how much more I want to even talk about this side of the ball. They didn't give us anything to talk about, yet we still keep blabbering on, Mr. Mariano.
Yeah, we do keep blabbering on, and the Bears keep putting up just performances that we have to blabble about, I guess. So it's just not a good situation to be in here, Will, and if you want to move on to the third quarter of the show, I'm not opposed to that.
You are not opposed to that. We shouldn't talk about all the three and outs. Did I hit my mark on the over-under?
Well, let's just go check this out real quick. Might as well. Why not talk about this offense a little bit more?
I know, right? I'm a glutton for self-torture.
So we have 3 3 and outs after the Bears' first drive of the game, if I'm correct there. Yep, so we have 3 there. Then we have, oh no. Well, one play, does it count if it's a one-play fumble?
I mean, that's not a 3-and-out, no. I mean, it was a turnover before 3 downs, but I wouldn't call it a technical 3-and-out.
I think I was right then, Will. I was right with 4. They right at the end of the half, they have I guess it's just 3 plays. They didn't get the punt yet.
They didn't get to punt it, but they ran out of time, and they would have. They would have just punted it.
Yeah.
Like or they wouldn't have made it, so it doesn't matter.
So they had 4 3-and-outs, and that's. I was surprised. See, they had 4 3-and-outs in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was expecting another one at some point in this game, but they kind of were able to move the ball a little bit more effectively in the second half. But 4 3-and-outs for the Bears offense. I guess I won that one, but it's not happy. Obviously, no one's happy with the number of 3-and-outs that the Bears offense had today.
No, and again, if you were working or doing some yard work, or you couldn't watch this game and you see all the yards the Bears put up, please take them with huge grains of salt. I mean, early on this game when it was still kind of, you know, an actual contention, and the Bears moved the ball 41 yards on their first drive, it took them 9 plays to gain their next 13 yards. I mean, there was a really dark period for this offense, and I actually just almost threw up in my mouth a little bit just thinking about it and had to hold that one in. So, yeah, it's not good. It's all the 3-and-outs and inability to even do anything until really the Titans just played way off. They kind of took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit, which was really the Bears' only chance of even moving this thing today, which, again, kind of saw it coming, but it doesn't make it any easier whatsoever. But, Nick, last call for offense. I'm done.
Same here, Will. There's Nothing else to talk about. But we'll see if it'll get better, though, with the Magic 8-Ball. So we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, we'll do that in the last quarter here of the show. Moving into the third quarter, let's talk about this Bears defense. They were doing some good things here today yet again. For a while, I thought my bold prediction was going to come true. I had the Bears, if you don't remember, Nick, keeping Derrick Henry to only 55 yards on the ground. He only had 68. And you know what? If Akeem Hicks makes a tackle, I may have been able to hold my my bold prediction would have came true. I was feeling really good when the Bears at halftime only was having him 26 yards on 13 carries. The NFL's leading rusher, Nick, was only averaging 2 yards per carry. And how I want to begin talking about this is you and I both, as we're looking at this game, we're calling for big days out of the inside linebackers, both Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan. And boy, did they come to play. They were all over the field. They were tackling, wrapping up, taking people down. And what I saw them do against Henry, which is the right thing to do, is you tackle him at his legs. And you get real low on his legs, too. Not the thighs. You go down a little bit lower. It was working. Both Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan blowing him up, getting those really short, either in the backfield or just some really short gains allowed. And I just want to give them a lot of kudos today because I thought they played their asses off, to be frank. They were Danny Trevathan, he had that one play in coverage, too, on Corey Davis late in this game. That was a great play against a wide receiver. That's a huge mismatch for the Titans. And Trevathan was in good coverage, able to put his hand up on that ball, rip it out a little bit. He played through the whole catch process, which allowed him to kind of knock that thing out. And that's a positive. And then, again, what they're able to do against Henry, against really the entire Titans rushing attack, because they rotated backs and I think more than I've seen all season for them. They're trying to get something going on the ground, and it wasn't the NFL's leading rusher. At least at some points, they're going to their second guy, their third guy. And I don't think I've seen that out of this team too much this season, and I think that's a huge testament and a kudos to this Bears run defense for as bad as they were a week ago. To turn it around like they did today, that's something that, a little bit of a tip of the cap to, because I think we need some of those kind of moments. And this is one, at least I have a little bit of a smile on my face now, thinking about that run defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure, we've also talked about wanting to see those double A-gap blitzes with the two linebackers. We saw that today with Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan, and it worked to perfection for this Bears defense. Roquan Smith ends up getting the sack. I think it was on a 3rd and 10 play. That's the perfect time to do something like that. When you have two linebackers that are, they're playing some good football as of late. Danny Trevathan has made a complete 180 degree turn from what he was playing like in the first 2 to 3 games of the season to where he's at now. I like this Danny Trevathan. When you can guard a wide receiver 20 to 30 yards down the field and break up the pass on Corey Davis, who just had a 100-yard game last week against the Bengals, that's awesome stuff. When Roquan Smith is the first guy there to tackle Derrick Henry and hang on and not let him just drag him down for an additional 2 or 3 yards, that's great to see. These inside linebackers are flowing, are filling their gaps, are run-stopping, are being productive, being the guys that I think coming into this season, we were anticipating them to be, and they did that against the NFL's leading rusher. You love to see that stuff. So I was really impressed by how these two inside linebackers played. They kept it as close as they could for as long as they could, given the circumstances they were in with this Bears offense just being, unable to really sustain anything. I was really impressed, just like you, with how they played today.
Yeah, I mean, we needed a big game. They showed out to play. And this is up front. They didn't have John Jenkins. You didn't have Roy Robertson-Harris. So you're getting big plays from guys like Mario Edwards yet again. And on top of that one, too, I think someone that I want to talk about, I'm going to do it now before I forget, because and it's no fault of his own, but can we talk about Daniel McCullers for like a hot minute? Because at first I was like, who is this guy? Who is 75? Yep. I don't remember this man at all until I saw the last name. I'm like, oh, this is the guy that they signed weeks ago that we were wondering, can he be the nose tackle help that we were looking for? And we kind of started to see Bilal Nichols and John Jenkins do it, and then you bring in McCullers, and I thought he played really well. He had 4 tackles today. He was holding his own up front, and he was, whenever I saw Derrick Henry running between the tackles and McCullers is out there, he was in the mix with a Roquan and a Danny Trevathan. And for a guy that is in seeing his first action this season, a player that I forgot they even signed, I don't know, it made me happy to see. Again, the small victories today is what we're going to be talking about, at least when it comes to the Bears defense. But I don't know. Did he stand out to you a little bit? Because I put him down in my notes. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to add him to like my player sheet. And I had put a couple marks down for him. So I thought that was a positive sign.
Yeah, absolutely. I have the first time I mentioned McCullers was number 75 with a nice tackle. So, okay, went to go look up, like, who is this guy? Look, well, the man is 6'7", 352 pounds, and he's out there first game action against a tough team that knows they're going to run the football, and he held his own. And the Bears have been looking for people to kind of anchor, just be an anchor, just don't move. That's not an easy guy to move. So hopefully he builds off this performance because the Bears need some help on the inside there. But, yep, just like you, I have Daniel McCullers a few times on my notes here, which is a good thing for this Bears defense.
And, again, you're seeing nice plays from, like, a Brent Urban. Again, we mentioned Mario Edwards. On top of that, too, I saw – what's his name? Vodders, there we go, getting involved in the action a little bit more. And I don't know, Nick. I mean, we keep talking about it just a little bit. Just how deep this defensive front is, and I feel like we're getting some of these nice contributions from some of these role players, and that's just so helpful. I think that's another part of this defense's success is the fact that they can get some production up front for some of these guys that maybe you don't expect it, and they don't lose too much when Bilal Nichols goes off the field. You don't lose too much if Akeem Hicks needs a breather when you have some of these guys that can contribute to this degree. Of course, you would rather have Nichols out there. You would rather have Hicks out there, but if you can give them some breaks and you also get some of these plays, it helps. And I think up front, it was really much a team effort to stop this rushing attack. I know we're really big on the inside linebackers, but it was the guys up front that kept them clean enough to go in there and start wrapping up and making these tackles. So really, the entire front seven, I thought, had a really, really strong game. They also were able to get Tannehill down for 3 sacks on top of that and just kind of all over with another 6 quarterback hits. And I just thought, a good day from this unit up front. Is there anyone specifically or any other general thoughts about the front seven?
Yeah, I think, again, Mario Edwards is a guy that has made plays before. I think one of the bigger impact games he had was against the Carolina Panthers. We had him jotted down in our notes. He's making a couple good plays. He has one of these sacks in this game. But I'm still looking for more of Robert Quinwell. As much as this front
all?
Seven... Yeah, as much as this front seven was, did their job today against the Tennessee Titans, number 94 is just not creating an impact. And we've been saying this all season. Like, again, he's had a few splash plays, right? But the consistency isn't there. Just the volume of productive plays obviously are not there. And being what was supposed to be the replacement of Leonard Floyd, he hasn't provided that. He's just another – he's the same – almost the same guy – wearing the same number, providing the same type of production as Leonard Floyd, which is exactly what the Bears didn't want. But they're just paying a lot more money to get that. And that's another thing that, again, needs to be improved. And I don't want to like harp on the deep because, the only reason the Bears were even in this game going into the fourth quarter, really, is because of the defense. So it's something that, I don't know if that, like a lot of the offensive production, I don't know if Robert Quinn's ever going to really make an impact. And that's, that's kind of scary to say, given how much he's making and what he's supposed to provide. He just hasn't shown me anything for me to think that he will. And I know, just in our midseason report, I thought maybe that was a guy that could project upwards. But no, it hasn't been the case. So I have to backtrack on that comment that I made and maybe tone it down for Robert Quinn and what he can possibly do for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, he's frustrating. He's maybe as frustrating as the offense sometimes, which I would say is which is saying something. Nick, what we saw from this Bears defense, I think, was very much status quo of what we've seen all season, bending and then unfortunately breaking here just a couple of times. But I thought they did a good job of not bending as much. I have in the first half 5 drives. That the Titans had 10 yards or less than 10 yards. 5 different drives in the first half. In the second half, you have 2 of those, maybe 3. Well, not maybe 3, that wasn't 2, but another one that only went for 12. So they're looking at about 8 drives that went for 12 yards or less in this game from the Titans. What was going right on those drives? And then we can talk about what went wrong on some of the others.
I think what the Bears were able to do, especially on first and second down, and that's why Derrick Henry only averaged 3.2 yards per carry, he was literally taken out of the game on third downs. And so that's the Bears just doing all the right things, actually making tackles. And we'll go to the other side of this, Will, what I saw as well. But I think them winning the point of attack from that front seven standpoint that we were just talking about took Derrick Henry out of the game. And then that's a big piece of the Titans' offense. Then you're more so relying on some of these wide receivers and tight ends that eventually did make some plays. But that's what they did so well. And that's why on third down, I have jotted down, Will, there were 7 3 and outs for the Tennessee Titans. And that's, again, this Bears defense, I think, you look at the score, yeah, no, 24 points, they definitely did a job. Let's wash that out of people's minds, because they definitely did. This is another game where we can say, give this Bears defense any other offense but the Bears are probably Jets, to be completely honest, and they probably win this game. So I think it was just their success they had on first and second down, taking Derrick Henry literally out of the game, and then having one of those other running backs in there, that messed up, I think, the flow and what the Titans actually wanted to do. And that's why I think they were successful in doing what they did, you know, for a big portion of this game.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because if you take Derrick Henry out of the equation, you take him out, and that's the offense that runs through Derrick Henry, they're scrambling for looking at other options, and they're not built to convert on third and long or anything like that. And that's when the Bears were really forcing them into. I see a 3rd and 7, a 3rd and 9, a 3rd and 13, a 3rd and 10, and a 3rd and 17, another 3rd and 9. They were keeping them in 3rd and long situations, which forces Ryan Tannehill to beat you with his arm. And the Bears defense, for the most part, played some pretty good coverage. Again, we'll talk about the drives where maybe they didn't here in just a moment. But for by and large in this game, they were playing good coverage and they were in right position, winning in the early downs and really making it difficult for them to succeed there on third down. And the Bears defense getting off the field, we don't want to talk about what happens after that. It's not good. But I thought, by and large, the Bears defense did a great job of just stopping this offense. Again, I mean, you talked about it, like the fact that the Bears offense has more yards than the Titans did today. With all the issues, it's nuts. It doesn't make a lot of sense, really, when you kind of think about it. But outside of that, Nick, there's a couple of drives where really, unfortunately, things broke. The one in the second quarter where they marched, I think it was 91 yards down the field, all the way down. They had 4 third downs converted on that drive, which is the bulk of them for the day for Tennessee. And then, unfortunately, later in the game, after the Bears get a field goal, the Titans themselves march 76 yards down the field real quick, only had to face 1 third down. They get a touchdown. I think that one was more of the Titans imposing their will and saying, no, you're not going to come back in this game, and we're going to show you. And also the defense is probably frustrated and tired at that point as well. But what wasn't working for the Bears on those drives? Again, not a lot of scoring drives for Tennessee, really, when the game was in the balance, which again, hat tip to the Bears defense for holding down Pat. But what wasn't working on some of those scoring drives?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of a bunch of things. Some of the things that we've seen all season, right, where the Bears are missing some of these tackles. I had both the starting safeties with missed tackles in this game, and I know that even on what it led to the Titans' first points of the game, which were just a field goal. Well, that whole entire drive continues because Eddie Jackson misses a tackle in the middle of the field, and then A.J. Brown makes 2 defenders miss. I think it was Roquan Smith and Kyle Fuller literally go out of the screen because he just stops and breaks inside. Then you have yards after the catch with a buster screen who on A.J. Brown, I think he leads the league in yards after the catch at wide receivers. He's up there. And when you have a guy, the mismatch in terms of height and weight, buster screen on him, that's going to happen. So some of the things that we've seen, Will, like obviously we've seen all season, bend don't break, but they will break at times. What's been the causation of that? Well, on those drives, maybe the pass rush wasn't as productive as we've seen, or there's just missed tackles, which we've seen all season. So it's a mixture of a bunch of things, but it's bound to happen. Like this defense isn't elite. So they are going to give up some of those drives where they're going to end up in a touchdown for the opposing team. But when we look back at it, what's really the cause? It's like all the things that we've seen all season, because it isn't an elite group. It's a good one and a great one, but elite doesn't let those things happen. But when you have the same reoccurring problems, like I was just mentioning, then you lead to some of those points that the Bears defense eventually gives up in any given game.
Honestly, if you didn't have the drive brought to you by A.J. Brown, probably a hold, you know, looking at a slightly different frame here for this Bears defense. He had a good catch with Gibson in coverage, and he followed it up on another third down later, the one with Buster screening coverage. And that was a drive, though, that they really went heavy on the ground while this Bears defense to sleep a little bit, which I kind of warned us in the preview show, like, Tennessee's going to do that. They'll run it 5, 6, 7 times in a row. And then what did they do? Play action, take a nice deep shot. And that was a great throw, a great catch. Buster was in decent coverage there. You couldn't always ask for better, but that, you can't also – it's hard to be in a spot when the throw is right on the money. It had to be right there in order for them to get that. So, yeah, again, it's just a matter of just a few of those plays going the other way. But by and large, this Bears defense, it did its job. I mean, they only allowed one red zone trip this entire game. 7 came from that 40-yard pass that we just mentioned. The other 7 came on that fumble. So that's not even the defense's fault. So, again, they did a good job, I'd say, today of not bending as much. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. But I would say for this Bears defense, which I believe on average has been allowing at least teams to get into the red zone a few times a game, to only hold Tennessee in there once, and that was pretty late, is another telling stat of just how well I thought they played overall. And on top of that, I don't know. It's just frustrating to watch it get squandered away, I guess. But what do you have? I see you put your finger up, which means you have a point.
Yeah, so Will, I kind of want to ask you this question, and maybe people even in the chat, it's like, at what point do you think this culture is really tested for the Bears? And what I mean by that is that there has been so many offensive performances, not only this year, but 2019, even 2018, where the defense has to do everything. They have to play almost perfect. Like we've talked about before, Will, they almost have to play perfect for the Bears to have a chance to win a game. But this is another game where the offense non-existent. Don't look at the 17 points. Actually look at what happened on the field. And the defense, the Bears lose, even though they have 7 three and outs. Only one trip in the red zone. Do all these great things, and yet there's no win. I wonder at what point this whole locker room boils over, something happens, where maybe one of the leaders on the defense either goes up to Nagy or some of these offense players, like, what the hell? Like, when are you going to back us up and actually do something for this team? It's one-sided. The defense and Cairo Santos are carrying this team and have done it for 5 wins almost, basically. And that's a problem. Like, I'm really surprised, and I tweet out during the game, at what point, I'm surprised it just hasn't happened yet. And we've seen some, I guess, maybe individuals on the team, the frustration's coming out. It's more apparent in some of these game broadcasts now where you see players are getting a little bit more frustrated. I think it's only at a certain point, Will, where we hear like one of these locker room incidents happen or something is said, because this is unacceptable. And as a defense, how much more are you willing to watch wins, possible wins? This is seasons on the line. This is players' livelihoods on the line. And it's because one side of the ball cannot do anything. So I don't even know if I asked the question. Do you think at some point, Will, this locker room's just going to blow up?
Depends on your expectation level. And again, I think the defense knows that they're good enough, but I think at this point they just know what the offense is. So I don't know if it's going to be increasing frustration or just accepting the fact of what's in front of them as well. But I don't know. If I were in that locker room on that side of the ball, I'd be a little PO'd. And on top of that, too, I think even if you verbally say something, it doesn't mean that you have a bad culture. I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting better play from the other half of the football team when you're doing everything in your power to keep this team in ball games week in, week out, and you're just not getting any help whatsoever. I saw here from Tony on Facebook, or he said, enough is enough. And I agree. Like, at one point, this defense should say, enough is enough. Do your damn job. Or do it at least somewhat better, because we're pulling our weight. It's time for you to do the same. Help us out once in a while. And after doing this for now, 2, 3 years, depending on 2018, they had a little bit more help. But the last 2 years has to be so frustrating. I couldn't even imagine. It's like doing like a group project, right? Like everyone's doing their weight. Everyone's doing their job. And then you get there to do the presentation and someone's like, oh, I didn't do my 5 slides. And then you all get like a failing grade for it. And it's not your fault, but your team, you're a group. And if one fails, you all do. And yeah, Nick, like you, it can't be all, you know, rainbows and sunshine in that locker room right now. There's just no way. Like, oh, it's okay, you guys, you'll get it next week. No, it can't be, right?
No, yeah, I completely agree with that, Will. And, you know, you made a good point. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad culture, but you could start to see maybe the frustration just being more evident, and that should be the expectations. Like, I think at this point, fans maybe want to even hear that. Like again, we'll see what happens. It has been a tight-knit group, and 2019 wasn't easy for anybody, but the group stayed together. And just because you're letting out frustration doesn't mean there's a divide in terms of, like, culture-wise. But, yeah, I would be okay with Khalil Mack, who doesn't speak very often, going up to Matt Nagy or the offense and, like, you better do something. And that should, like, scare the crap out of anybody just hearing that from Khalil Mack, to be completely honest. Or, you know, Akeem Hicks growling at people, like, growling at his own offense, whatever. But and seriously, like, they should. That should be the expectation, because they've done all they could this season. And now what started off as, you know, 5 wins in the first, what, 6 weeks, whatever it was, now they're 5-4, Will. Now they're going to be really tested. That culture is going to be tested. This team's going to be tested if they can't get on the right track.
Yeah. I'm just like, speaking of tested, I think both of our patients is as well. So if ours are, again, if you're more into it and it's actually your livelihood and you're the one out there putting your neck on the line each and every week, eventually you would think that some of these tough and probably needed conversations, it must be happening. Real quickly, I know we haven't, we can talk about some individuals if you like. I think we should give some praise to our outside corners, Kyle Fuller, Jalen Johnson. Early on in this game, they kept really wanting to go after Fuller. It wasn't working. And then they're like, oh, we got to figure out, we'll go elsewhere, which is when you start seeing some of these other plays happen. So kudos to Tennessee for figuring that one out. It's really hard to do much of anything going up against Kyle Fuller. And then Jalen Johnson, too, had two really incredible PBUs in a row where he's making nice plays on the ball. So I know there's a lot of flack here in the chat about Buster Skrine, and I understand he gave up a couple touchdowns today. He was obviously, he made a good tackle though for a loss, so there's a, you know, some positive in there too. But every defense is gonna have a weak link, and obviously he may be it, but the outside guys I thought played really really well today, probably the best two out of the entire secondary from what we saw from Eddie Jackson, which, you know, they're talking about that touchdown, and I know it's a really good ball, but the Eddie Jackson, I think, I know, you know, has that range to go up there. You don't need the pick, but at least make a play on that ball. I thought he seemed a little soft at the attack mode there. I thought he laid off just a bit, or was a step behind where he probably could have been, I would say. Now, maybe not should have. Maybe I can't say should have. He gets paid a lot. But at least where I know he could have been.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point, because I think I had it in my notes, or maybe just a mental note, because Eddie Jackson has gone for, like, where his range is at. I think if you were to kind of go back, anyone in the chat that wants to kind of look this up, look at the interception he has against the Arizona Cardinals. 2018, just look that up, his interception. The range he's able to get from hash mark to numbers, which was similar in this game, but I think this was a closer margin. A. Jackson wasn't there. And that's kind of been, like, the reason why maybe we're not seeing the elite level of deep. Like, individual players are not playing to what we've seen. Like, that's a play where I believe that A. Jackson has a range to get over there and at least make an attempt at the ball or, like, deflect the pass. Wasn't close. So I completely agree with you. That's one that, yeah, he wasn't even in the vicinity. But to go back to Jalen Johnson, too, those pass breakups that he had back-to-back, one being on a 3rd-and-9, that happened right out of halftime, the Titans' first drive. And this has been times where we've seen the Bears' defense kind of let up, kind of give the team a few points, but Jalen Johnson not having any of it, having great back-to-back plays and just kind of showing, like, he is having a phenomenal rookie season, and the stats and everything kind of backs that up. But just want to give him a little love there, because those were two great plays. But completely agree with you on A. Jackson, and like I said, if someone wants to go look at the range he has and just being at the center field position in the secondary, go look at the interception he makes against the Cardinals. See how far he goes. This is a shorter distance, and this one he wasn't even close.
I guess when I asked earlier what was going right, now that we kind of talked everything through, it makes a lot of sense to say, you know, the front seven locking down Derrick Henry like they did, dialing up the pass rush like they did, whether it be just the front four or sending in a blitz like what they did with Roquan on third down, which is awesome because I've been waiting to see it. They don't use it a lot, but when they do, it's damn near effective. And on top of that, your outside guys are locked down. I mean, that makes things very difficult for an offense to figure out how to move the ball. When your two outside receivers or anyone who's lined up outside, you probably don't have much of a chance. Anything in the middle is going to be very difficult with what's going on up front. So then you do have to look into the slot and to some of those other areas of the field over the middle, test these safeties. And unfortunately, I think the safeties didn't hold up too well today when they were tested, whether it be that terrible tackle attempt that allowed for 38 yards or so, like right after the catch from Eddie Jackson. Gibson, I thought, didn't have his best game of the season as well. But still, I think what's working today was the outside guys in the front seven. That was a pretty good tandem that we saw.
Yeah, absolutely, Will. And, you know, I hope that play continues because that will at least still keep the Bears in games. And you never know if a little luck on that the offensive side can help. But, yeah,
no.
Just throw it away.
Did you see the one play, though, in my notes? I'm just looking at anything else to talk about real quick. The one where Ryan Tannehill juked out Khalil Mack. It's like Mack gets gets out there, he's trying to get the sack, and then he just takes a little sidestep, and he's able to scramble for, like, 5 yards. I'm like, well, that's not right. That's not what I expected out of that.
He's an athletic quarterback, but that's Khalil Mack. That can't be happening. And, yeah, there's a lot of things that can't be happening on both sides of the ball, specifically on the offense.
Anything else on defense that you want to talk about before we move into the fourth quarter of our show?
No, Will. Let's get it going.
All right. So jumping in, quick hit on special teams. At one point, Nick, I really thought we were going to be in a punt-off. Who can have the longest punt of the day? I mean, both punters, I mean, incredible stuff. I mean, O'Donnell had 6. Theirs had 8 punts. Wow, that's crazy. Today, Nick, there was over 700 yards that were punted by both teams combined. 298 for us, 404 for them. But they had a long of 65. We had one of 64. And I'm pretty certain they were in opposite directions. So I don't know if it was wind, but it felt like both of those, both punters today. I'm gushing just because it was this back and forth 55-yard punt, 60-yard punt. I'm like, what? Like, what are they on? Are they going to get, you know, randomly selected by the NFL for some testing this week? Because that was interesting to say the least. But other than that, I mean, we can talk special teams here for a bit. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I thought the Bears were going to actually get a punt block at some point. They were pretty close to Raymond, the Titans punter, a couple of times. And being a new guy, the first game that he's playing with the Titans this season, I thought they would be close. But you know what? Dwayne Harris has, again, I think not – I want to say he's been a spark plug at the position, but he's done some good things. Like the over-the-shoulder catch that didn't even end up counting because there was a penalty they repunted, but had – like. If that was Ted Ginn Jr., he would have easily let that ball hit. It would have bounced. It would have stopped right at the 1 yard line, and the Bears' offense would have been backed up. But even seeing Dwayne Harris attempt that, catching it, and it didn't even count for anything because of the penalty, I like seeing that from Dwayne Harris. I just like what he brings to that position and him fighting for every yard that he can get and at least giving that punt team an opportunity to set up some blocks so he can return it. Like, that was non-existent with Ted Ginn Jr., so I really have enjoyed him being back there as a punt returner. Again, not expecting much, but I like seeing what he's able to do.
Yeah, it's he averaged 10.7 yards per return today. He had one of his longest was 19. And Nick, again, this was a non-existent element to our game ever since Tariq Cohen went down, and then they bring in Harris, and now he's at least giving the Bears on average at least 10 or so yards before the offense actually needs to step out on the field. So just helping the field position game. Again, we need, unfortunately, more than that. But at least we're not shooting ourselves in the foot too much here now as punt returners like we just were. And again, winning the field position battle just a little bit more here. Unfortunately, our coverage units, I think, I don't know. I mean, they had some issues. They allowed 16.3 yards per punt return. But also, O'Donnell was booting the thing, and unfortunately a couple of those times you're out kicking your coverage, which could have negative repercussions as well. But there are a few times when he's punting deep in our own territory, like inside the 20, and I think he totally flips the field today, O'Donnell did. So I think that's good to see, of course. And then, like you, we talked about the fake already, so I'm not going to do it here, but they were close. I tweeted. I thought they're going to get a block. I mean, they're really close on a few different occasions here, and a punt block may have been like a play needed to even give the Bears like a chance, or like a big play like a punt block. And I was hoping that could have been one that they could have gotten today. But outside of that, another, you know, Dave with, you know, Cairo Santos going out there and hitting his one attempt that they allowed him to do today. Should have been a few more, as we already discussed. But anything else on the third phase?
No, that's really it, Will. And before we, just in case where we're going with the next segment of our show, before we go and calling an audible, which we could just call an audible in for the entire game, to be completely honest. Yep. Like, just let it not happen, right? Just want to make sure anybody that's looking to get a shout-out on the next podcast, you can do so by sending us a donation at Venmo or PayPal. And for Venmo, the handle is at the Chicago Audible. PayPal is www.chicagoaudible.com/PayPal. Again, all the proceeds, all the donations that we get just go to make this show happen, really, from the equipment that we use, the software that we're recording on. Just anything that you can provide helps us to, you know, keep the show going during the tough times like this. Another Bears loss, the third one, Will, in a row now, so it's tough. But again, if you want to get a shout out on the preview show for this upcoming week, you can send a donation at Venmo at the Chicago Audible or PayPal, www.chicagoaudible.com/PayPal.
Good reminder there, Nick. Definitely get yourself a shout out this week on the preview show. Again, it's our only preview show we're actually going to have here for a couple weeks, as the bye week will follow this one. So definitely, not that we won't have a bye week show, though. So I guess that doesn't even matter. But still, help us out if you can. Super appreciated. I know Nick is working on his green screen to see what we can do. It came out a little wrinkly out of the box, just a little bit.
Very, very wrinkly. I have to put that thing in the dryer and see what we can do next. It's huge, too, Will. Like, what you're seeing on screen, easily that can all be covered up by the green screen. Then we can have some fun with it.
Yeah, and then you can get, like the green man suit, and then we can just totally make you invisible, and then you're good to go.
I could just be, like, a floating head, then, if I took off just
you're right.
The mask.
You could be a floating head.
That would be interesting.
Oh, the magic, the powers that be with technology. Yeah, I don't know if that's the best use of the tech, but we'll figure out what is or what is not. Trial by air, just like this Bears offense. All right, so it's time to call an audible. Unfortunately, Nick, can my audible be my monster moment? Can I just take that one back too? I mean, again, that fumble was huge. You're taking points off the board, or at least a chance at points, and you turn it into a 3-score game, and this Bears team, how that offense was going, there's just no way a 3-score game you're in contention. I mean, most teams midway through the third quarter, a 3-score game is tough to come back on. So to me, it's easy to look at that one and use it, so I'm going to do it just because, to me, again, biggest moment, hence why it's the monster moment. And also, if you can take it away, I think it could give the Bears a chance here down the stretch. How about you, Nick? What would be a moment or anything in this game that you wish could go differently?
Yeah, you know what? I'll go actually on the very first drive of the game for the Tennessee Titans. Kyle Fuller's in perfect position to jump the route for, I think it's A.J. Brown running on the out route. Kyle Fuller's there and almost has that interception, and maybe even given how fast he's breaking on the route, how late the throw was from Tannehill, maybe that's a pick six. Maybe the Bears go up early in this game, and maybe it's different. Who knows what could happen? Momentum and just taking that play and the confidence maybe the offense has, like going out on the next drive or whatever it could have been. And look, not to say that Kyle Fuller had a bad game or anything, but I think that's a play that we've seen him make. You know, one that we went to the Miami Dolphins game, Will, in 2018. It's a very similar play. Kyle Fuller jumps around in an out route to the wide receiver. I think Osweiler was a quarterback at the time, and it's a very similar, like, that's what I envisioned. That's what I saw when I saw the play. But again, this 2020 defense hasn't made those same plays that they did in 2018. But that's one I'd call an audible on. And again, no, we don't know if that changes the direction of the game, but short field for this Bears offense, they need every yard they can get, and you know, I think that's just a play that Kyle Fuller has made in the past, and I would have liked to see that one gone his way.
Again, I mean, in a game like this, you need every chance you can, A, for points, and B, to seize momentum or take some momentum or create some momentum, and that would have checked every single one of those boxes there, so that's a really good one. I actually forgot I even had that in my notes. It, again, that game felt like a couple lifetimes, and I honestly thought that happened last week, but that's a really good one, too. A small one that I think, like me, people probably forgot about, and it could have had a bigger impact down the stretch in how this game did turn out. But, Nick, now that we've called an audible, who's going to be your Week 9 MVP?
I almost want to give it to Pat O'Donnell just for the game that he had today and just punting the ball. But it has to go someone on the defensive side of the ball, and I really loved how these inside linebackers played. And I'm going to give mine to Danny Trevathan. I think especially given where he started this season and what he's able to do against a Tennessee offensive line, a Tennessee offense that runs through Derrick Henry. Going into this game, the NFL's leading rusher, he was all over the field, making tackles and in the backfield or going downfield, defending wide receivers. Danny Trevathan was there, and he was doing a hell of a job just helping this defense to mitigate the damage, keep Derrick Henry at 3.2 yards per carry, taking him out of the game on third down. Danny Trevathan's a big part of that, and I really enjoyed how he played in this one. But I was easily going into the show, well, like, am I going to give my MVP to Pat O'Donnell? Like, we've done it for Cairo Santos, what, twice, I believe, this season, which, again, that shows how much this offense hasn't been capable of doing much. But I will give it to Danny Trevathan. I really liked how he played overall run defense in the past and just where he's come from to where he's at now. I think he's definitely deserving to be the MVP of this one.
Yeah, agree. That's a really good one. Remember, he was my X factor on defense, and I said we will live or die by how he defends the run and the pass. And we lived because he was able to succeed in both of those regards. So that's a really good one. I'm glad he stepped up for you enough to make him your MVP. I almost want to do something crazy and give it to McCullers. I really do, because he played well up front. And this defense, when he was out there, I thought everyone up front looked a little bit better because they did have that big body in the middle, that nose tackle, and he provided run support, and he helped keep these linebackers free. But I won't give him the MVP, although that would have been awesome for him in his debut, a nose tackle that no one ever gives any credit to, becoming the MVP. But so he's like an alternate for me, so he gets some love. But I'll give it to Trevathan's counterpart, and I'll give it to Roquan Smith, because he was just all over the freaking field today. I mean, early on, he was just, every time I look up, oh, there's number 58 making a tackle. Oh, there he is again making a tackle on the sideline. Oh, he's in the backfield. Oh, he's in there again. Oh, look, it's third down. They sent him on a blitz. He gets a sack. I mean, he was all over today. He was tracking down people from behind, so like when there were catches over the middle of the field behind him, he was able to catch them and make some tackles, not allowing those to go for larger gains. So for me, Roquan just being up or being all over the field and leading the team in tackles in that big sack too, I'll give it to him. MVP Roquan Smith. All right, Nick, you want to do our two-minute warning?
I suppose we have to, Will. So, you know, and I'll start it off too.
All right.
Just with this two-minute warning going into what a critical matchup, a primetime matchup against the Minnesota Vikings. Ooh, we have the timer here, so this is nice. I get to actually see how long
you're wasting seconds.
But I know. So basically, when I'm looking at this team, now 5-4, dropping three straight, there's no signs of where they can actually improve, especially offensively, given that they're going to be still down some starters going into this next game against the Minnesota Vikings. Where are the Bears going to get any offensive help to establish the run? David Montgomery has a concussion right now. If he misses a game next week, that's even worse for an offense that can't do anything with the weapons that they do have. So I'm not feeling confident whatsoever about the offense, what its trajectory could be moving forward. And because defensively, they're going to be in every game, but there's no sense of confidence for me that the offense can capitalize and actually make the most of what the defense is giving them. They almost have to play perfect. I've said this so many times, and it's probably getting annoying at this point, what this defense has to do, but they really have to perform at their peak performance if they want to be in any game. And look, they're almost doing that, but the offense isn't giving them any help. There's like we're seeing the same problems as well. Penalties, lack of execution, the details not being there from every single player, and that's a problem. That goes back to coaching. I don't care that the Bears have four or five original offensive linemen not in the game. You can't have some of your veterans make the same mistakes or just mistakes to mitigate the potential of every drive, and that's what's so damning to see every Sunday. And it's not going to get better. It won't, and I want to see, like I was talking about earlier with Will, at what point does this defense kind of look at the offense and say, when will you do, so you know the gif where you're poking at it, do something? That's exactly what this defense is doing to the offense, and that's where I'll wrap it up. There's no, I guess, future in this.
You did perfectly. Triple zeros across the board as soon as you wrapped up. You said it's not going to get any better. Does that mean you peaked at your Magic 8-Ball?
Ooh, let's check it out. Yeah, will it get better? And oh, damn it, I got to shake it again. It went away. It went away. Oh, there's the answer. Oh no, this is not good. Don't count on it. No! Oh, I don't know if you guys could see that in there. It's too blurry, but it says don't count on it for this offense getting any better. There's so many positives in that in this 8-Ball too, Will. Like, everything we were asking it yesterday, it was just random stuff. Everything was positive. Or, yes, things will get better. Like, that's, like, probably the one negative answer, and of course it happens. The Bears offense will not get any better. Don't count on it, according to the Magic 8-Ball.
I think the Magic 8-Ball may now have to be, like, a staple on our show, man. I mean, it proved. I mean, it's earning some respect for me right now, because if it would have said, "Oh, you know, it's gonna happen" or whatever, then I'm like, But the fact that it's like, "Don't count on it" is like, it's the most fitting answer of them all. So it's really pulling its own weight right now. I'm glad your early birthday present's helping us out.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, I think that was the same response, if I'm not mistaken, in the first Toy Story, where Woody's shaking it. He's like, "Don't count on it," and then the whole scene happens in Andy's room. But yes, go ahead with your 2-minute warning, Will. I'll shut up about the Magic 8-Ball.
You're gushing over it. All right, so for me here, as my clock starts to tick for the 2-minute warning, it's really hard to know where to go. I mean, again, it was just a couple of weeks ago where we're looking at a 5-1 football team coming off a couple of big wins that we were pretty ecstatic about. And, you know, it wasn't always pretty, but at least they were finding ways to win ugly. And even though it's hard to accept winning ugly sometimes, we were still accepting wins. And now that you're losing ugly, I think we all know how bad that feels as well. I think the whole frame of how we're looking at this team is starting to change. I think confidence is starting to, you know, slip in a hurry. I think that's rightfully so, unfortunately for us. And when you're looking at this offense, Nick, you know, obviously we can't count on them getting better. But another issue as we're looking into next week, even short term, maybe we'll get a couple offensive linemen back. But what about David Montgomery? Like, he went out with a concussion today. Without David Montgomery, what does that do? Does that mean you go to Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, 20 more times a game? I really hope not. On top of that, too, it's just something where I don't know. Like, I'm so at a loss right now. And usually I feel at this moment I can wrap things up, keep it nice and elegant. And not really today. I'm just very disappointed for everything we saw today. And we knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. And it still really hurts. Defensively, we know this unit's really good. Maybe not 100% elite, but still very, very good. And I think we saw some moments of elite defensive play today. And heck, I guess you can almost call borderline elite today with what they're able to do with Derrick Henry. Unfortunately, though, with how this run defense goes, watch out for Dalvin Cook in a week, because he stopped one, and then the wheels can quickly fall off here in just a little bit. But as I'm looking forward, I'm excited for the bye week, a week off, so I don't have to watch this. So I'm glad we get a long week, get the bye week, and then we'll reset as we kind of go forward. There we go. That was close. See, this is cool, though, to have a timer, and I have to stop looking at it just a little bit too much. But, yeah, Nick, 5-4. 5-4. I went from 5-1, 5-4. Real chance at 5-5 at the bye. It's scary to think about, but that's kind of the reality that we're at right now. So I'm going to go ahead.
In the chat, Will, B Team just asked, can the Magic 8-Ball call plays? Should ask it, and maybe for next week. But, yeah, they again, one of the many problems that's wrong with this team right now. So. But we'll see. Can the Magic 8-Ball call plays? I'm going to shake it, actually, and see what it says.
Do what it says real quick. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. Oh, there it is. It is concentrate and ask again. All right. The eight ball.
It's thinking about it. It's thinking about it's honestly debating, does it want that kind of responsibility? Because it may not even help. So it's like, it doesn't want to be the scapegoat. Maybe it should be on Nagy right now. And it knows that Nagy wouldn't even relinquish play calling duties over to the Magic 8 Ball. So maybe that's what it's all about. But I want to thank everyone here who is watching live. You know, really good live numbers. And it's Sunday afternoon, at least around here, really nice weather, and I'm sure everyone had probably more important things or better things that they could have done instead of relinquishing in a loss like this. But I'm glad you did join us today for this postgame show, and same goes to everyone listening to the podcast across the globe. I appreciate each and every one of you sticking through, listening to us, despite the effort and the outcome that we saw here in today's game. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. That way you get a notification each and every time that we go live. Participate in the live chat. There's a lot of fun happening in there. And, of course, rate, review our show on Apple Podcasts. That helps us reach more Bears fans just like yourself. So up next, we'll start doing our homework, looking at the game next Monday night. This Bears offense has to go in prime time here against the Minnesota Vikings here in now 8 days. We'll be back here soon to begin looking at our Week 10 preparations. But until then, Bear down, Chicago. Bear down!